And there's a lot of people that use fear. There's a lot of people that try to use other emotions. And I'm not necessarily opposed to those, because funny isn't the only emotion that can be used to get the kinds of results we're talking about. It just, for me, happens to be the one that I think, if you've got the right team of writers, and that's key, it's easier to repeat the success.
We're on a mission. We're going to find and uncover the smartest, most successful entrepreneurs on the planet, explore their highs, their lows, and how they ultimately mastered the game. I'm Martin Cook, and I'm excited to welcome you to the Smarter Destiny podcast. I'm grateful for you and your time. Now let's level up together. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another Smarter Destiny podcast. So this time we are joined by Joseph Wilkins. Joseph is the founder of FunnySalesVideos.com and the host of How to Make a Video Go Viral podcast. Joseph is a legend. I reached out to him personally after seeing that he's a speaker for an upcoming event that a buddy of mine is hosting and stalking him a little bit, actually. Going on to FunnySalesVideos.com, which I highly recommend you do as well, and watching the funny sales videos that he makes. We might abbreviate that later on to FSV. We'll see if we're going to go there. Basically, these videos sell with humor. They are highly effective, highly engaging, highly entertaining, but also they're a fraction of a cost of what you might expect to pay with the likes of Harman Brothers or Blue Chip Entertainment video producers, which is why, in part, Joseph has some incredibly well-known brands as part of his customer base. So we're talking Google, Chevrolet, Goldman Sachs, McDonald's, and a whole host of others. And that might well be because Joseph is the man. He's been doing marketing for 25 years, and he's been doing this, i.e. selling stuff with video, for more than 20 years. And there was a major pivot 5 years ago, which we're going to get into. His companies have generated over $250 million in sales, and if that isn't enough to get you to tune in for the next 40 or so minutes, then I suggest you go hide under a rock once again, because this video is not for you. But for those that want to tune in, buckle up. This is going to be a good one as I welcome Joseph to the stage. Joseph, how's it going?
Great, Martin. Good to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
So, Joseph, we can't necessarily tell by your accent. Whereabouts in the world are you? And is
that's the question.
Been?
Nobody can tell because it's kind of a hybrid between British accent and an American accent. Basically, lived half my life in London, the last half of my life here in Utah.
In Utah. And so those of you who are just listening to this, you need to find the video version. There is a sensory overload background behind Joseph. He is in one of his studios, I imagine one of many, and it is absolutely incredible. It's hard not to get distracted by the lit up neon signs, and even there's even a gumball machine just on display as well. So you've got to find the video thing. But Joseph, what we like to do on the show is we like to go back. We like to go back to a point in time which really begins to set the tone and the scene for you as an entrepreneur. Some kind of life event, maybe some kind of mix up, some kind of failure, success, whatever that might look like. If you've got a time in mind, or perhaps there's two times you want to talk about, could you take us to it or them and paint us a word picture?
Gosh, so I mean, I kind of believe that entrepreneurial spirit is something that's just in your blood. Some people maybe, you know, they have a big event where it changes them. But for me, I mean, literally back in the days, I won't go into too much detail, but when I was a little kid growing up in the villages of London, outside of London, I would have dog walking businesses. I'd hire all my mates to go walk the dogs, and I'd take a car. I'd do gardening. I'd go door to door. I just wanted to make money. And so when I left college, you know, I had a bunch of very small entrepreneurial ventures. But my first job after, you know, I got married and got a mortgage and realized I had to actually settle down. And I absolutely hated it. Working in corporate America, my first job was in the marketing department for a huge healthcare company. And I was just bored to death. And so I just did everything that I could to figure out how do I get out of my 9-to-5. And that was 20 years ago that I basically started freelancing for other people on the side, doing marketing, whether it was website design, or it was back in the day when video was just barely able to be streamed on a, I'm dating myself, but you know, on faster internet connections than a 56K modem. But I was working, my next job after that healthcare one was, I was the marketing director for a hot tub company, doing a lot of commercials, TV commercials. We did an infomercial for that company. And that's when a Little Giant Ladder approached me to say, you know, we're producing an infomercial and we need some help. And that one project, that infomercial did over $200 million in sales. And that gave me the confidence to say, okay, I'll take them as my first retained client, quitting my job, told my wife, we're going all in on, you know, on the entrepreneurial bug. And that's when I started my video production company that that I still run to this day. But the second pivot was about 15 years later, so 5 years ago. You know, we basically hung our hat on television for 15 years. We produced infomercials, you know, 30-minute long shows, produced 30-second commercials. And then we started doing stuff for online YouTube, blah, blah. And it was a great ride until it wasn't. What I mean by that is people just don't watch TV anymore. Like, you know, people like you and I probably don't even have a cable TV, satellite TV subscription. We go online to get all of our content. We stream it. And so our clients' results just started going down and down and down as people stopped watching. The cost for the airtime wasn't getting any cheaper. The cost for production certainly wasn't. And so we had to really look and say, where are these viewers going and why? And the first answer was easy. They're going online. And in a lot of the cases, you know, they're spending more time on social media than just sitting down watching a TV screen. But the other answer was more tricky. Why are they going online and in what mindset are they watching? Because just taking a TV commercial that we used to run on TV and putting it online or putting it on social media, you can't expect to get the same results. And so we started to say, okay, if people are going online to these social platforms, they're not going there to be bombarded with ads. They're going there to be entertained. They're going there to, you know, waste some time on their lunch break or coffee break or whatever. And so the closer that your content looks like the reason that they've come in the first place, obviously, the more likely you are to connect with them. So that was the big kind of light bulb moment when we said, okay, we need to create funny, engaging, entertaining content that almost tricks our viewers into thinking that they're just watching a piece of sketch comedy. And then once we've hooked them, and you know, that's a big buzzword, the hook, once you've hooked them, they're much more likely to keep watching, even when they realize it's a commercial. So I'll finish by just giving you a compare and contrast. Before we launched funnysalesvideos.com 5 years ago, our biggest video view that we'd ever got online, we had one company that did a video that got 100,000 views, which we thought at the time was pretty good. Our very first campaign that we launched after we spent the time, and we can talk about how we did that and how your listeners can do it, after we spent the time to create the team to produce these funny videos, our very first campaign for a very small, super niche company with a niche audience got 7 million views and immediately generated over $500,000 in revenue. Fast forward to today, and our biggest campaign has over 100 million views and millions and millions and millions of dollars in sales. So that's a very quick way of recapping the last 25 plus years.
Well, that was slick, and I felt like I was on that roller coaster with you, Joseph. I would like to delve into, if you like, you talked about the pivot to online and making your content fit with the space that it's being shared in, which is absolutely right. And you know, nothing stands out more than inappropriate content, perhaps a landscape video on TikTok or something. It just stands out like a sore thumb. There's many examples like that. And so say for argument's sake, we're creating a video that's for YouTube. YouTube is predominantly an entertainment and education platform, shall we say, if we're going to really sort of, you know, dumb it down. You chose as your form of entertainment, humor. Why?
Good question. So,
are you a funny guy?
I'm not. And that should give, well, I mean, everyone thinks they're funny, right? So yes, I think I'm funny, but that's I'm intelligent enough to realize that I'm not funny enough.
Right.
And that's the key, because the reason why for 15 years, literally, when people would call us and say, hey, we've seen this really funny video, we want to do something like that, we would say, no, we're not the company for funny, because we didn't have the right team. The worst thing that people are doing out there, and you see it every day, is trying to be funny and end up just looking silly. You see it all the time. People who think that their jokes are funny and they try to make one video revolving around one joke, and you just can't sustain it. And so, no, I didn't think that I was funny. And so we decided we had to go out and find professional comedy writers, comedians, people that are literally doing stand-up at night for their job, and then during the day they're traveling to their next gig. And my mind's just gone totally blank. What was your question?
Well, it was, why did you choose humor?
As the
thing, right?
Yeah, because we spoke before we started the recording. There's a lot of people that use fear. There's a lot of people that try to use other emotions. And I'm not necessarily opposed to those, because funny isn't the only emotion that can be used to get the kinds of results we're talking about. It just, for me, happens to be the one that I think, if you've got the right team of writers, and that's key, it's easier to repeat the success. Like, I've seen some great campaigns that will make you cry. Mm-hmm. Just as valid, but much, much harder to come up with the ideas, to repeat them, and to get, you know, to build a business around. I think fear is that's a little bit of a controversial subject, because I think, does it work? Yes. Short term, in my opinion. Long term, I don't know that fear is something that you want tied to your brand. Humor is on the other end of the spectrum. Short term, it works great. Long term, in my opinion, it works even better, because it makes people remember you. And even if they don't buy, which is the ultimate goal of our videos, is to make you immediately buy. But even if you don't buy, it's fantastic for branding, for long term memory. And then the next time they encounter your brand, they already like you.
I think that's so important, and I'm gonna step on my soapbox for a moment here and be a little bit more on one side of the fence. This is in a big part, and we were speaking about this off air. This is a big part. I'm speaking for me here. I'm not speaking for Joseph. A big part of the reason that I reached out to you is what I feel like, and what we do on this show, even when we're reaching out to founders, that are doing the right thing, not necessarily the easiest thing, right? They're making the world better in their own way, right? And we have a lot of founders that have been on the show that have like really powerful missions, really powerful charitable elements. They're there, and we do the same with our brand, Newbury. They are there to make the world a better place as a result of them being in it. And I think the pandemic was a great mirror in some ways. The fear that this COVID, now there's a new strain of it, and now we're up to the fucking XYQZ variant. Like, it was such a demonstrable way, and it's a really, really easy example to show how, like, the news channels in particular were generating impressions and attention and eyeballs with this fear, right? What an amazing hook. You might die with this silent killer that you don't know about, we don't know about, and everybody's living in fear and isolation as well now, by the way, because you're all like, you know, locked up at home. And that is terrible. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible world to live in, a sort of a fearful world. But then there's lots of brands online, particularly in our space where we're, you know, in the supplement space, there's a lot of brands online where they're selling with fear. They're like, you take this liver supplement or you're going to die of liver disease. And here's a bunch of stuff about someone dying of liver disease, or you take this brain pill, otherwise you're going to end up in a care home with people changing your diaper or nappy, right? Like, that's horrible. I don't want to be a part of that. And so it's a breath of fresh air to have people like yourself saying there is an alternative. And humour is an amazing, amazing tool. I love that you're bridging the gap as well between dry British humour and sort of sarcasm and off-the-cuff remarks and a little bit more blatant sort of in-your-face humour of other countries. You're walking that line. But how amazing. You've sold something. Like one of my favourite videos on your website right now is a laundry detergent, a liquidless laundry detergent. And I love that you're selling something so fucking boring and you've made it so entertaining. I've watched that video myself 3 times and shared it with 3 people, right? It's ridiculously entertaining.
But did you buy any?
I have a person for doing my laundry, but I did give it to that person who happens to be my wife. Sorry, wife. You know, I actually did. She was one of the people I shared this with, right? And cool, absolutely, cool. You know, absolutely. And it hit the convincing points that I knew would, you know, are important to her, like the eco-friendly nature of a liquidless detergent, right? And you found a way to sell that like that, whereas you could have easily gone down an angle where you go, if you keep buying plastic, have you seen the landfills? Have you seen what that's doing to our turtles in the sea? Do you know the world's about to set on fire and explode? Think of the children, right? You could have gone down that angle. You didn't. You've gone down a humor angle, and we need more people like you in this world doing that. So once you've brush the flush off your face from all the compliments coming your way, Jason. And we've established my stance very, very firmly. Can we get into a little bit about how people who want to deploy a little bit more humour, perhaps video-based humour, into their business can do it on their own initially? And we're going to talk about working with you as well, of course, right after.
Yeah. Can I address one point before I go there?
Yes, you can.
So I love what you just said, but I want to point out that we actually did in those videos and total transparency, True Earth Eco Strips is still to date my most successful campaign. That very first video that we did, I think, is approaching 70 million views. And we actually did broach every one of the subjects that you
yep,
just mentioned.
You did. Yep.
We just did it tastefully, right? The last thing you want to do, in fact, I was listening to a podcast. This is a little bit off the subject, but I think it's important. I was listening to a podcast last week about LinkedIn outreach, okay? Funnily enough, that's the way that you reached out to me, right?
Somehow
you sent
we got
me
through,
a message that said, you complimented me about something and then you invited me to come on the show.
I think it was Girth. Followed by the business you did 30 years ago, something like that, right?
But the guy on this podcast said 2 things that stuck out. He said, it's really one. He said, when you're reaching out to anyone that you want to connect with, pretend that you know nothing and they know everything. I thought that was really profound to think about. Because, you know, everyone wants to reach out and say, I'm the expert, I have the solution, you have the problem. Totally reframing that is the best way to reach out to cold traffic or, you know, however. And in a way, it connects to what you just said. Because, yes, in that commercial, we still wanted to point out the problems, right? The problems are, if you keep buying plastic laundry detergent bottles, we're going to fill up the landfills and the planet is going to burn eventually with the problems of the all this pollution. But we didn't want to look like you're doing something bad, I'm telling you off. Because that's never going to lead to a sale, right? So if you as a business owner listening to this have a product or a service that people really need to use genuinely. And if you don't, you shouldn't be in business and go find something better because you need to provide, you know, the Harman brothers, who are one of our mentors, always say nothing sells better than the truth, right? Doesn't matter how much you dress it up. Maybe short term, you'll get a bump, but long term, you won't. Nothing sells better than the truth. So you've got to address the issues, but we did it in a way that doesn't make you feel like we are preaching to you. It doesn't make you feel like you're doing something bad. We're the savior that's coming in to fix your problems. No, we wanted it to look like you are just fine. But have you thought about this? If you reframe the conversation, you're saying the same thing, you're getting the same results, or you're looking for the same results. It's just a reframing of it. And humor is a great way to just make somewhat touchy subjects to some people safe to talk about. Anyway, that I just wanted to mention that.
I think that's amazing. I missed that point. Obviously, that information was included in that sales video. And I think you said, like, all of the bottles used can go around the world like twice or something like that. There was visual elements to it, but you didn't feel like judged. It didn't make you feel like icky, like the charitable adverts that come onto the TV where it's like, it's in the time you've been watching this, 8 children have died because of you, sort of thing. Like, you don't want that, right? You don't want to inject it. Works, but that's not it. You got the information across, and you chose education and humor as your two entertainment pillars in that, and it worked really, really well. So is there maybe a 8-point way of breaking down these kind of things that you could talk about, Joseph?
There is. And if people want to try this themselves, so a lot of people say, well, that's great. I've seen videos like that. I wish I could do something like that. I just don't know where to start. So we've created a free ebook that anyone can download that basically steps you through the 8 steps that we take every one of our campaigns through. And I also always say, whatever you're doing with your marketing, and marketing is like a salad. You should have all different kinds of tests going on. But if you haven't tested good humor, then you're missing out. You should be testing something that is, along the lines of what we're talking about today. So you can download it at our website, just right on the bottom of the homepage, funnysalesvideos.com. But it steps you through all of those 8 steps. So do you want me to really quickly run through them?
Absolutely.
Okay, so number one is doing your research and understanding who you're talking to. You would never write a letter and then after you've written it, decide who should I address this to? And that's what a lot of marketers do, is they write, copy and scripts and emails, just thinking about the product or thinking about why they invented it or thinking about why they like it without really doing their research to find out, no, who is actually buying this and why and what are the reasons? So, building customer avatars, can't stress that enough. Make sure, as granular as you can, you know who you're talking to. Step 2 is the one that most people stop at. Where do I come up with an idea for my video? How do I start with a white blank page and start to write a script? Well, the answer is you don't. You start out just throwing out terrible ideas. And so what we do is we have a goal of throwing out 50 bad ideas for every one great idea that ends up being the video. So, and I'm not talking about, getting into details. I'm talking about 2 things. Who's the hero of this video? The main character. Who should represent your customer avatar, or should at least be someone that avatar will relate to? And then what's their big problem that they're living that your product or service solves? So just, again, you can download the ebook and read more about how we do that, but just take the judgment away, take the pressure away. You're looking for quantity over quality. And I promise you, if you throw out 50 bad ideas, you'll come up with one good one. Most likely 4 or 5 or 6 that you have to then distill down to the one. So step 3 is scripting. And every one of our videos kind of goes through the Donald Miller story brand kind of a format where you have, the hero of the video that has a problem, that finds a guide who gives them the solution, and then shows how their life is better because of that transformation. And I always tell people, of these 8 steps, you can do every single one on your own, or you can hire the professionals to do every single one, and the results will correlate. But the 2 that I would strongly recommend you to hire professionals for, as a video guy, you'd think I'd say for the filming, and it's not. It's for the scripting, and it's for the acting. If you're not a comedian, don't try to be the actor in your funny video. If you're not a professional comedy writer, don't try to write comedy for your video. Everything else you can get away with. I mean, let's face it. I'm holding in my hand here a camera that I would have paid $100,000 for when I started this business 20 years ago. There's no excuse for people saying I can't film a good video. Now, you know, there's all sorts of different levels of quality, and that will correlate with how hooky the video is going to be, but find really good people that will help you to write your script. Step number 4 is bringing comedy into the script. So there's a script writer that has the copy points for the marketing and then the story, but then the magic really happens. On every script that we produce, we have at least 7 or 8 different writers, because no one person's going to come up with all of the content for your video, not if it's going to be good. And so we will bring in multiple professional comedy writers to add jokes and to punch it up and to really spend the time. We take 2 months to develop each script, and then another 2 months to shoot it, edit it, and make sure everything is finished. So again, I'm just breezing through this. Step 5 is production. And you'd think I would say, again, back to the camera equipment, that's not the most important part of production. The most important part of production by far is auditioning and casting the right actor. We'll look at about 100 actors for every one that we cast. We take a lot of time to audition, bring them back, you know, go through different rehearsals, make sure they're the right person. The best actors, in our opinion, for these kinds of videos, have experience with improv comedy. And they'll add things on set that we didn't even write that makes it even better. So really, really can't stress enough how important it is to pick the right actors. And then obviously on top of that, yes, you want it to look professional. You want it to look, you want everything you can possibly have right to get the kind of success that we have in many of our campaigns. Okay, step 6 is the editing. It'll probably blow most people's minds to find out that most of our campaigns, when we edit them, we're coming up with 36 different versions of that same video to test. It's about art and science coming together to test. We write, script, and edit 3 different opening hooks to test. We write, shoot, and edit 3 different offers. And then we're doing full-length versions, up to 3-4 minutes sometimes. Then we're doing much shorter versions. We're testing different. And so it's constantly, you know, it's not just let's make a video and hope it goes viral. That's not what this is about. This is about testing which video, when fueled with paid ads, brings us the biggest return on ad spend. Step 7 is testing, right? And we can talk forever about that. But basically, this isn't gambling. We're not going to go to Vegas and throw it all on this one video. We're going to create all of these different versions. And then with a strategic approach, we're going to test, and then we're going to throttle up the ad spend on the winners. Final step 8, is forget going viral organically. Now, do our videos get organic virality? Absolutely. But it's the cherry on the top, right? Maybe 5 to 10% of our views are organic because of how much people like them and share them and comment on them. And that will boost their success, but it's by no means a business model that you can predict, repeat, or control. So reframe the question of how do I make a video go viral to how do I make a video that when run as a paid ad brings me back a higher rate of return that I will want to continue spending. And those are the 8 steps. Again, download the free ebook, and you can do every one of these steps or you can bring in professionals to help you with some of them.
Amazing. Thank you so much for breaking that down, Joseph. So funnysalesvideos.com is where you can go for that ebook. I've got a question here. What about the new trend? See, it's not even that new anymore, but the new trend of vertical video. So the reels, the TikToks, yep. All of the social networks have them because they work. How do you support your clients who have got you to do this sort of modern day infomercial, shall we say, as more sales video would be a better way for like a YouTube type dimensions. How do you use the footage that you've generated and whatever to start churning out some of those reel type under 30 second verticals
videos? It's the bane of my existence, vertical video. I hate it, but it's a necessary
evil. Do
you
shoot for it as well now? Do you shoot with it in mind when you're actually filming?
Yes. So here's how I do it. Again, starting back to the very beginning, step one was doing your research. Understand who is it I'm talking to. That will then inform you of where those people are going to be spending most of their time. I'm not the expert on, the latest platform metrics. But I know that, if I'm going to be producing a commercial for a teenage acne cream, I'm not going to be looking for that person on Facebook. So I have to prioritize filming in a vertical format. Now, what we typically will do, if there's a client that's like, we're going to be on TikTok, we're going to be on Instagram, we're going to be on Facebook, and we're going to be on YouTube. I mean, that is most of our clients. And we have to literally, when I'm directing on the day of the film shoot, I have my monitor and I have different guides on my monitor. I know that, I have to have all the critical action right in the dead center. And in some shots, I have to do multiple takes. Okay, this one is for our vertical because it's there's a lot more information on the frame. So the last thing you want to do is go spend all of this money filming footage, take it to your editor and have him say, are you kidding me? There's no way I can format this for TikTok. You have to know that right up front. You also have to know what the lengths are. We do, like I said, multiple lengths, multiple versions, and it seems like it's changing on a daily basis. So you need to keep up with all of that before you film.
I love that. And thank you for breaking that down as well, even on the filming side. I remember I think it was 2016, I was invited to a Facebook event in New York, and the Facebook Blueprint team were there. And they were talking about that. They were talking about, at the time, they had tons of inventory available for story ads, right?
Yeah.
So advertisers weren't really using the story ad placement because it required videos of a different resolution, different shape, right? It's vertical and so on.
Yeah, ratios. Aspect ratio.
There we go. That's what we're looking for. And as a result, the videos that they were running, which would be square at best, the most Facebooky would be square at that point, they couldn't run on the story. And so the Blueprint people were saying, like, hey, you could get really cheap ads and really cheap ad results if you start filming with this resolution in mind. Now, that was 2016. Fast forward 6 years later, there's reels, or the reel equivalent, or shorts, or whatever you want to call it. Even Netflix's app has like shorts like that, right? That is the future. I read something today that Facebook is now changing their newsfeed to prioritize the short vertical length videos, and the newsfeed is going to go into like another tab. So the things that you initially signed up to Facebook for, like seeing the events and social humble brags and not so humble brags from your friends and stuff, that's being downgraded. And what you'll see first primarily is like viral short clips. So it's coming. TikTok has forced that and demonstrated that it's valuable. So I think it's really important to touch upon that.
I'd just add to that, I think a lot of people, and it's super valid to bring up and you have to know it, but I think a lot of people get very hung up on the aspect ratios and forget the psychology that because that format is typically a lot shorter, yes, you got to film it in that aspect ratio, but even more important is what's the content in the first second, right? What is on the screen that is going to stop you? Because, in my career, I've gone from 30-minute infomercials down to 3-minute videos for Facebook and YouTube down to 15 seconds on TikTok.
Donald Millering, your 15 seconds is here.
Yeah, exactly. You can't do it. But here's what you can do. You can earn enough interest, curiosity in that first few seconds to earn another 15 seconds.
Yeah.
And then earn another 15 seconds. So, you know, even TikTok is now allowing longer videos, but the attention span has to be earned. Mm-hmm. And so what are you putting in front of that viewer, especially in the world of TikTok, where they're used to user-generated content, right? Most people, when they see a professional ad, then they're more inclined to swipe. So you gotta disrupt them even more. I'll give you a quick example. We had a client, the exact same video with three different opening hooks. So first 5 to 10 seconds. Version one, we ran it with an ad spend. We got a 1.9 return on ad spend. Version two, we got a 2.7. Version three, we got a 4.1. The only thing that was different at those three videos was the opening hook. The difference between a break-even campaign and a 4.1 sustained for many months that, you know, was extremely profitable. And we would never have known that if we hadn't tested with those opening hooks. So what are you doing with your content to test? Is it just that I'm not getting past that first 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds?
The thumb stop seconds, or the not clicking the skip button as soon as it becomes available.
Exactly.
So what do you do? So you were talking about then, like, so we ran this different one, that suggests like a real partnership with the client, even after the point where the videos are made. So what does your sort of the sunset service kind of look like? So in this campaign, yeah, with the client, like, how are you, I'm assuming you're not running the media for them, but,
correct,
but you've obviously got the data on like what's working. So what does that part of your collaboration look like?
Yeah, so every client's different. We are just a production house, right? So we're the guys to come to if you have no clue what you want, but you know you need content that's going to convert. So we go through all the scripts, the steps I mentioned, but then what we'll do is we'll either partner with the client who has an in-house marketing team, media buyers, you know, funnel sales, page builders, all of that stuff, retargeting, email, everything that happens after the click. Or if they don't have that, there's a couple of agencies that we work with. In fact, Ian, our mutual friend, is one of the agencies that I refer to all the time. And then we will work hand in hand with that agency as we pass off the media, because that's not the end of our job. We want to look at those, you know, retention curves, right? And see where are we losing people? Where are people dropping off? Yes, we give them, you know, 36 assets to test, but let's say they find the winner and they run that, but then we want to analyze that winner and say, how can we make that even better? And if in your retention curve, which is for people that haven't used it, in any of these platforms, you can go in and you can see your video from, you know, minute or second one to second, you know, 180 in a 3-minute video, and you can see, where are you losing people? Now, it's normal to lose people when you present the product, because all of a sudden they've realized, oh, this isn't just a, you know, a sketch comedy from Saturday Night Live that somebody's sharing with me. This is an ad. So that's normal. But anywhere else that you're seeing really steep drop-offs, it means one of a couple things. Either it's getting boring, it's getting confusing, or, you know, it's just not engaging people. So what we will do is we will go back into the ad and we'll either take that part out or rearrange it or speed it up. I mean, one criticism that we do get is that some of our ads are overwhelmingly fast, which we love, because the number one reason people start watching videos isn't because they're too long. I mean, Netflix is still in business, last time I heard, albeit, you know, having issues right now, but it's not the length. It's the fact that people are getting bored. So our videos are so jam-packed both with visual information and audio that never lets you really take a breath. We want to we know that we've got your attention for a short period of time, and we're going to tell you as much as we can. So that typically isn't a reason why our videos get a drop off, but there are places that our videos, you know, that people aren't quite understanding it, and we've rearranged things, put them in different orders, or, you know, maybe we've asked for the sell before we've explained one other thing that they needed to know in order to make the decision. So there's all sorts of things that you can do after the fact. Also thumbnails and copy. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation. So many things that you can test.
I feel like we could stay in the weeds for a long time, Joseph. And I'm assuming that the ebook fleshes out a little bit more of this. And so at the very least, people in the cheap seats, you can jump into the ebook and see how that feels for you. And certainly you want to be starting with funnysalesvideos.com. Do not just to check out the videos on there. I highly recommend the True Earth laundry strips video, but also if you want to get into a further conversation with Joseph and his team, is that the best place for them to reach out to you, just via the website?
Yeah, there's actually a form right on that homepage to schedule a free brainstorm session with me if you want to just chat about ideas for your business. So yep, same place for both.
Amazing. All right. So at this point in the show, we like to mix it up. We go into the rapid fire question round. I ask the questions quickly. You choose the speed in which you respond. Are you up for that?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Are you two thumbs up? Up for that? Yeah. There they are. All right. Let's jump in. Joseph, if you ever had to start again, how would you make your money?
I mean, to me, money is just a byproduct. I get up every day and I'm excited to go to work. And so I don't know that I would do too much different. I mean, obviously the world today is so much different than how it was back when I started 20 years ago. But to me, if it's not making you smile and if it's not, you know, getting you up early in the morning with a spring in your step, it's not worth doing. So money to me is secondary. So I would say I wouldn't do too much different other than obviously the technology.
Beautiful. What's the most common or biggest mistake that leaders make?
I think thinking that they can do everything better than anyone else and limiting the opportunity that they have. You know, you just happen to be, in my opinion, in a lot of different situations that went right for you to be in the place that you are now, if you're running a business. That doesn't mean that you're the best qualified person to do everything in the business. So I think finding people that are better than you at pretty much everything in your business.
So potentially illustrating that, who is a great leader, whether alive or dead, and why?
Gosh. So back in college, and I haven't seen these questions, but back in college, I actually worked for Apple Computers. I was the campus rep for my university, and I got the opportunity to work and meet face to face with, you know, a lot of the greats. The only person I didn't meet with was Steve Jobs, but, you know, just all of the leaders underneath him, I did. And I've always been just a huge fan of his, reading his books and seeing how he just absolutely transformed that, or created that category, really, of the home personal computer and the, you know, the obsession with quality. So, you know, Steve Jobs is definitely one of my top examples for leaders and transforming industries.
Beautiful. Now, you talked about doing a lot of casting, which is, I guess, one way of hiring and employing people. But you also have people on your team and you have the comedy sketch writers, which actually would probably vary quite significantly from project to project. So when you're going through that process, what are you looking for? How do you hire top talent?
A lot of trial and error. I mean, literally just like the casting process, because typically what we do is we'll look through agencies' portfolios, we'll see obviously their headshots, we'll watch videos, but then we'll request at least 20 auditions for every one actor that we end up casting. And so by very nature, you know, that's kind of like interviewing, right? Mm. I remember reading a book by Dave Ramsey that talks about how every employee he hires takes 6 months, I think it was. He goes through, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 interviews, because the cost of hiring the wrong person is so high. In my world, it's not, you know, it's not nearly that. But, you know, as far as writers and crew members, you know, filmmaking is a team sport. Absolutely. You have to have a whole bunch of people, 20 plus people work on each one of our videos that we produce. So, and like you said, every video, there's a different 20 people that are involved in that. And so I think bringing each person's strengths based on the project, you know, bringing, if it's a female product that we're selling, I got to have females on the writing team. There's no point, you know, just having a men's locker room writing for them. So bringing in the right people, you know, the cliche of getting everyone on the bus and then making sure everyone's in the right seat on the bus.
Nice. What's one of your proudest moments?
So I hate to be repetitive, but the week that we launched our very first True Earth commercial is probably still one of the biggest highs. I can't remember the specific numbers, but it was just an absolute explosion online. The second day after we released it, that company organically shot to number two on Amazon in the personal care space, which you can't buy that. About a week later, the co-founder Ryan called me and told me that the retail stores that he had his salespeople knocking on their doors trying to get a meeting with the buyers were calling him saying, we need to start selling your product. So many people are coming into the stores asking for it by name. I mean, he basically knocked out brands like Tide and you know, these huge Fortune 100 companies with a viral video. And so, you know, that's probably still my biggest, most proud moment. Along with that, you know, that's a larger company. Let's talk about the one-man band that, you know, thinks that they can't do anything like this. I had a company approach me. I say a company. It was basically one guy that had invented a pain relief device that almost had to mortgage his house or get a loan to be able to do this campaign by the time you put the production cost with the media buy, building out the web funnels. I mean, it's not an insignificant thing. And I remember the next time I saw him, he told me that their sales had doubled. They had paid off 100% of the debt that they owed on the company. And we did one campaign, and this sounds very puffery, but they did one campaign to a list that had basically gone cold and got a 19.6 ROAS. Wow. I mean, just blew my mind. To cold traffic, got a 5.6 ROAS. And so the satisfaction that, you know, literally I was almost losing sleep over the fact that this guy was betting it all on this campaign, and to have it be so successful, that may overshadow the success of the bigger campaigns.
Amazing. So what's one interesting fact about you that not many people would know?
Interesting fact about me that not many people would know. That after 14 years, I just had a newborn baby. So I've three kids, three teenagers, and we thought we were done. And then just surprise, surprise, I just had a brand new baby a couple months ago. So that's probably the biggest joy of my life right now.
Amazing. Well, my second one just turned 6 months, so I'm feeling your emotions, the uncommunicated emotions right now. And there's a gap between 4 years between him and my eldest one. So even the sort of the feeling of, phew, don't have to do that again. Oh, now do that again. Kind of. Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's coming through.
That's funny.
Loud and clear. What book or books or other learning materials changed your mindset or life?
So the very first book on advertising that still, I think it's on, is over on my shelf over there, Ogilvy on Advertising. Absolutely fantastic book for anyone that just wants to dive into simple principles of advertising, written, I don't know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, maybe even longer, that still apply today. In fact, I'm thrilled that Ogilvy chairman of Ogilvy is going to be at the event that I'm speaking at in Oxford University next month.
Is that Roger Sutherland? No.
Rory Sutherland, yeah.
Rory Sutherland, that's one.
Yeah.
Amazing. You're going to fangirl out, are you?
I am, yeah.
Don't curtsy. Right, now that we've got that idea out of... What's the most exciting question you spend your time thinking about?
What's next? I mean, if you look at my progression over the past 25 years, it's constantly changing. Not the principles. Nobody gets bored of a great story, but how do you share that story? You know, how do you deliver that story? And so, you know, to me, the answer is the metaverse, augmented reality, virtual reality. How do I deliver my content in a world that's, you know, different than just a two-dimensional screen? I think that's one of the things that I've been, I'm always on the, you know, spending all of my money on the latest tech, the latest camera equipment, the latest computers. And I really see that being the next big thing that I'm going to be investing a lot of time in and probably money in.
Amazing. What unusual or underrated food or drink should more people try out?
Well, it's probably not that unusual to you, but here living in America, Indian food is the thing that I miss from home, and fish and chips. Indian and fish and chips. A good chicken korma is hard to find, and a chippy is pretty much non-existent, other than the ones that the Americans will say is authentic fish and chips, that never ends up being. So coming home to England next month for that conference, first thing off the train, going to go find a good chippy.
You're going to have fish and chips covered in a chicken korma curry sauce.
Yeah, exactly.
Beautiful. All right. So this is a sort of slightly newer question, but it's relevant. So there are murmurings and naysayers and predictions of an upcoming recession that we may or may not already be in. Certainly, we've gone through a sort of interesting couple of years. Things like commonly used shipping methods are changing. They're becoming more expensive. They're taking longer. Our consumers potentially have less money available if you believe all of the stuff and your whatever. We're potentially going into a point of time that is different and potentially harder. You know, iOS 14 kicked a lot of people in the nuts, 15 and, you know, 16 and so on. Everything's kind of changing and transitioning. That can be an opportunity. That can be a bury your head in the sand, whatever. My question to you is, what are you doing in your business to not only survive, should we say, a recession, but thrive in that? And what do you recommend the people, the business owners listening to this show do in the same time?
So I'm going to ask your question in a little bit of a different way.
Do it.
I'm always, I like to think that I'm pretty optimistic. Right. I'm a pretty positive person. I'm pretty confident. And I don't believe in the sky is falling down mentality. Right. So the first thing I would say is I avoid unnecessarily diving into the news media, you know, people that are down talking the recession that's coming, the economic impact. Yes, all of that is probably true. In the world, when I get here every day and shut that door, it's not happening in here. I'm actually gonna thrive because of it. I know that. How do I know that? Because that's my mental attitude. And I think that if you have that as a business owner, yes, you have to be realistic and you have to have plans in place. And genuinely, you have to be better than your competition. You have to be affordable, if that means cheaper than your competition. Maybe it means cheaper, maybe it means more expensive, but better.
More
so
valuable.
You're providing more value. So I would say moments like this are just opportunities for you to evaluate, what am I putting out there, both mentally and from a service? If you genuinely are better than your competition, you'll beat your competition even more in environments like this, because more expensive, lesser quality products won't thrive in a down economy. I had a very similar situation around 2008 where we went into that recession, and that was the most profitable time in my career. COVID is another example, right? Everyone was saying the sky is falling down, the economy is going bust. We had record-breaking years the last 2 years. In fact, for the last 2 years, and it's only just beginning to ease off now, we were booked out. You called us, you wanted to do a video, 6 months. You'll be on a waiting list. Why? Because we figured out, and yes, a lot of it was luck. There were businesses that were really affected a lot more than us, but because trade shows shut down, door-to-door sales, face-to-face sales stopped, what filled that gap? Online content, videos like us. We transformed through that room is our big studio. We transformed it into a live conference event center where people that would go to these big events came in here. We put them on Zoom. We have multiple cameras. We made better experiences for them virtually. They could have thousands of people now at their conference instead of hundreds of people. So I always kind of poo-poo people that say, you know, you know, the recession's coming, the sky's falling down. It is for people that don't think different.
Amazing. I think that's an incredible response. And I think it's an opportunity right now. That's how we're embracing it. We've sat on a great product. We know that it helps and enriches the lives of our customers, and looking forward to, in many ways, a big shake up of the established things and norms and stuff. So, just evolve folks, and use this as an opportunity to exercise those kind of questions and react accordingly. Which brings us to the final question, Joseph. What makes you happiest?
My faith and my family are the two things that make me the happiest. My family, as I mentioned earlier, they're everything. And how does that relate to business? Well, why are you going to work every day? You know, if you've got a bigger purpose, the other thing, and I guess it relates to faith and family, is doing good. I don't talk about it much, but since you asked the question, I guess I'll mention it. One of the things that we do is we give back to charitable causes. Our biggest mission right now is working with a charity in Africa. In fact, I was there a year ago filming a documentary for them, something that we volunteered to do to help raise money. And since then, we've donated two wells. It's a company that drills for water. A month ago, my two teenagers got back from a two-week trip there where they were doing the humanitarian work, drilling these waters for villages that don't have clean water. I mean, I could talk forever about the problems that clean water creates, not just the ones that come to mind. But I mean, I think I personally believe that God has blessed me with an abundance, and so I have a responsibility to help others that don't have that. That's what I love.
That's an incredible answer, and it's completely in line with the mission of Smarter Destiny, where we are empowering entrepreneurs, turning them into enlightened entrepreneurs that recognize that you have a responsibility to use your wealth, status, platform, influence, whatever it is that you have, to make the world a better place. And charitable initiatives, give back things, just really asking the question and really being empowered to tackle the world's big problems. That's what the difference is between an entrepreneur and an enlightened entrepreneur. And Joseph, you clearly are the latter. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today. You crushed it. It was a pleasure having you.
Thank you, Martin. It's been really fun.
Hey there, you incredibly good-looking human. Thanks so much for listening. If you had a good time today and would like more good times in the future, please hit that subscribe button and leave a heartwarming review. I read them all, and it will go a long way to help others out there benefit from all the teachings of this show. And if you want to get in touch or otherwise learn more about me, head to martincook.co.uk or smarterdestiny.com. I really appreciate you. You're an incredible human. Until next time, keep crushing.